This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
Kevin McHale is a Hall of Famer and a three-time NBA champ. He worked for TNT and the NBA TV. Doubleheader tonight, Miami at Boston, Oklahoma City at L.A. Let's talk about it, Kev. Start with Miami at Boston. Boston's a veteran team. They got about one more run left in them. How far, in your opinion, can this old Celtics team go?
Well, they're going to have to play well, of course, as every team does. But they're going to have to find some rhythm. They have a fun rhythm all year. And, you know, you talk about KG's being suspended for tonight's game. You know, it makes it just even harder to find that rhythm. All year long, I was waiting for those guys to really kind of just catch a wave and think, okay, they're gonna start playing better now and really get on a month or 2 month stretch. But I don't know. I mean, I know as a player, I can tell you that you never think it's the end. You think, okay, we'll turn it on in the playoffs, and you know, we don't have our window's not closing, because you know you feel you're immortal when you're playing. Like, you know, you'll never get old and stuff. But realistically, Boston's got a year or two left in this run, and it's going to be tough, though. I mean, geez, I think right now, I think Orlando and Cleveland are playing the best in the East. And I said this earlier. I said Boston's going to have a handful with Miami. Just trying to get past this series is going to be tough. So it should be a really fun game tonight. You know, and I love when there's little scraps and little fights out there. I think there's going to be some bad blood, which always makes the you know, the series way more interesting and stuff. So, you know, to answer your question, you know, I'm sure that they don't believe their window's closing. They think that they can make a run right on the horizon. You know, you got Cleveland and in the second round, and man, I tell you what, that's a lot. Cleveland's playing really well. So, you know, what kind of run can they make? We're going to find out, but they'll have their hands full tonight.
Kevin McHale joining us. It's The Herd on ESPN Radio. The Lakers, who really kind of sloshed their way through the last 3 weeks, veteran team, then clearly defensively they flip a switch against the Thunder in the first half and Kevin Durant. You know, it's a lot of people will bang on the Lakers. I always felt they could flip a switch because they're a veteran team. Were you surprised how they were able to slow down Durant?
I really was, and I mean, give that credit to, you know, the team, but Artest really did a nice job. I mean, you know, he got up into him, he held him, he grabbed him. I think KD got a good feel, and you know, he got a little taste of what playoff basketball is about, because he couldn't shake free. And you know, they let you play a little bit more, it gets a little bit more physical, and Ron just held him and grabbed him, and just, boy, he couldn't break free. There was no freedom of movement for him, and he just never got into the rhythm at all. And then when he did, I thought they were bigs. I thought, you know, having Bynum back is huge for that team. I just think, you know, you can play the Twin Towers, and Bynum's length really seemed to bother Oklahoma City. And, you know, same with Gasol. And, you know, they have the best closer in the game in Kobe. And that's the one thing. If they keep it close, you know, with Kobe on your squad, you always have a chance. I mean, I hate that flipping the switch. I know if you're a coach, you're saying, Let's start hitting rhythm after the All-Star break. Let's really start, you know, playing our best basketball coming down the stretch, and let's not worry about flipping the switch. But you look at LA, and they really did. I mean, they defensively were really locked down, and I'm going to give Oklahoma City a lot of credit too. They did a nice job defensively. They went out there and really competed. I thought there was a stretch there in the third, end of the third, start of the fourth, where, I mean, Oklahoma City makes four, five, six stops in a row. They just couldn't score, and it was a fun defensive battle. And then, again, that's going to be a fun series. I anticipate that you know, Durant's going to shake free a little bit more tonight, and you know, be able to at least get away from Artest and get some flow going on the offensive end.
You know, I always felt, Kevin, that the advantage in the playoffs for veteran teams, and this will sound weird, but you play the same team, so you get more film study on one guy. Veteran players know how to break down film study. Veteran players can really wear on you when you see the same guy six or seven times over the course of 2 weeks. It's one of the reasons in the NBA I always go with a veteran team when it's a coin flip, is that the underrated thing in the NBA is intelligence, and most of your great players have gone on to really good business careers. And it's nothing against young guys, but I look at Portland and I look at Oklahoma City and they look like kids out there. Your thoughts on being a veteran guy on veteran teams and what that means in the postseason?
Well, there's no question. I think you also, as a veteran, you just start getting a little book on everybody, a mental book where you say, okay, I'm going to make this guy go right. I'm going to make this guy go left. The scouting report comes out. You sit down and talk to the coaches. You watch your film. You have a game plan when you play these guys. Like, you know, right now, when Durant goes left, he's usually going to pull up for that jump shot. And I'm sure that, you know, Artest is forcing him left, getting up on his hand. And also, Artest did a great job of pushing him out just 3 to 4 feet farther than he wanted to get the ball all the time by being really physical with him. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, as a veteran player, you do have a game plan to go in defensively, and you're able to stick with the game plan. I mean, you don't lose your mind, and all of a sudden, if a guy can only drive, you know, let's say a guy just really wants to, you know, drive right. Sometimes as a young player, you get so excited, you run up on him, you close out, and you give him the right-hand drive. As a veteran guy, you're much more under control. You're pushing him left all the time. You're really taking things away, and that's what veteran good defenders do. Again, as I said, it's not like you're going to go out there and Kevin Durant's not going to score, but you got to make him take a lot of shots to get his points. And Artest is going to take one or two things away, but I agree. Veteran players know the scouting report, do a much better job of following the scouting report, and they make you play to your weaknesses. I think to me, as a player, that's when you improve the most, is when you start going through playoff runs. People start playing me differently. They expose your weaknesses, and it really gives you things to work on in the summer. So overall, this will be a great, great experience for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I love that young team. You know, win or lose, whatever happens in this series, this will be the best thing to happen for that team. Being able to play a championship caliber Lakers team in the playoffs will help those guys next year immensely.
TNT and NBA TV Hall of Famer Kevin McHale, Heat at the Celtics tonight, 8 Eastern. Oklahoma City at the Lakers, 10:30 Eastern. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, thanks.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
With Ryan Russell, I'm Scott Van Pelt. It's ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. Todd, you good to go now? Everything situated?
Yeah, I'm good. This whole extension thing that you need at the end of your cord now. I mean, why don't they just build a cord with the right plug?
There's that, but since we're actually sitting face-to-face...
Probably don't need it. Well, I like all the production. I like to hear the production. I like to know, you know, what's going on top to bottom.
Gotcha. Yesterday, we had Jimmy Clausen on.
Okay.
And the thing that I to give him credit, the guy had 28-4.
Yeah,
that's touchdowns to picks.
Yep.
And he played with a busted up toe that he hurt in the Michigan State game. And yet, it seems to me that he cannot get away from that picture of him with the spiky hair and the rings when people decided this high school kid was coming in with too much swagger. And everyone questions, can he be a leader? And I look at a guy that played hurt and hung those kind of numbers, and I say, he did it on the field. Why is there such a disparity in what his talent would seem to project at to where I seem to see him in mock drafts?
I think that a lot of NFL teams are comfortable with some of the stuff from earlier in the career that you referenced, showing up in the limousine and all of that. That's just a young guy making some mistakes. I think there's an overall, I know there's an overall feeling within NFL organizations, and it varies a little bit here and there, but I know from talking to, honestly, I'd say over 20 at this point, over 20 teams, that there's the entitlement. He acts as if he it should be given to him. He's always had the best coaches. He's always been went to the prep school, the best coaches. Just not the kind of guy that you want and trust coming in right away and becoming the face of your organization. The other thing you have to understand too is that if you're going to invest a first round pick, likely somewhere, you know, first half of the first round, the money you're going to invest, you've got to play him early. I mean, we've seen the last couple of years, it's the way things are now. And if you do that, does he have the maturity level and the mental toughness? No one's questioning his physical toughness. And prior to this year, he wasn't on the radar, really. I mean, you're talking about maybe a mid-round pick, don't come out of school this year, we'll see you in 2011.
He lit it up.
But he played so well, and he grew so much as a quarterback, and he showed so much toughness that he got to this point. But ultimately, if you have to play him as a rookie, does he have the maturity level to handle failure and everything that goes along with it? And does he carry himself in a manner that veteran – NFL players are going to be able to respect him? Those are the questions. It's not that he's an awful kid or this, that, or he's the young punk. It's just how he's going to handle things in the NFL and how he's going to be perceived within that locker room.
And before you jump in here, just one thing, just a thought.
Yep.
When I hear people say, can he, then I think that they're saying he can't.
That's what I'm getting. Or the real... Real skeptical.
Okay.
Yep.
You have Clausen going number 17 to San Francisco.
I'm not sure where to put him.
Well, yeah, I mean, your latest draft and Steve Mensch, Kevin Waddle, a couple more guys from Scouts Inc., the latest mock draft 5.0. is, besides Clausen, which I think is a good example of the question I'm about to ask you, which player has perhaps the widest range of where they could go?
C.J. Spiller, the Clemson running back.
We all high end, low end.
We all know he's the best back in the class, and he's the only running back you look at and say, you know what, I'm going to get more value than just running back. And I think that's why he's so coveted, so explosive and versatile. But I think as high as 6 to Seattle, and I know that's a little bit of a reach, but 7 at Cleveland, if Eric Berry's off the board and the Browns can't move around or do some different things and they're not going to take Clausen, do you take Dez Bryant or do you take C.J. Spiller? I know it's not a huge need, but just out of value, there's some people think they could go there. Oakland Raiders a possibility, Jacksonville at 10. I think low end, Houston 20, but there's no way. I honestly think he's going somewhere in that top 12, 13 picks. Maybe it takes a team that moves up a couple spots.
We were talking front office earlier, and just I want to throw out an email that we got from a guy in Louisiana who said, I'm a homer, but he mentioned the New Orleans Saints. And,
yep.
And Ryan, agree with you on Indy, and I threw out Houston as a below-the-radar team. But what Chuck and Lafayette points out is not just the Reggie Bushes, but it's the Meachams and the Ellises, but guys in the later rounds like a Porter, Bushrod, Nix, Colston, Harper, etc. Is that what you look at when you ultimately are grading the success of a front office, what Ryan was talking about with the Colts? Not so much who they get early, but who can you find in the mid rounds that is what you identify as a great front office?
It's you have to absolutely dot your I's and cross your T's, for lack of a better term, in the first round. You can't make, if you make a mistake, it has to be a freakish accident or so. You can't have missed because you didn't get the character right or you didn't. And so teams that do a great job when they have a high draft pick and don't bust in that high draft pick in the top 10, you can't afford to.
Sure.
That's part of it. Secondly, how do you do then in the first and second round as a total? And you start, look, because you've got to find starters in the first and second round. The difference between an average draft and a good draft is 2 and 3. 2 starters is an average draft. 3 starters from that draft is a good draft. It's that slim of a margin. So that's how ultimately I think you really grade, you know, evaluators. And then, as you say, if you can go pluck a starter from the 5th round, the 7th round, free agent, I mean, those are the guys that not only you're paying a little bit of money, but also you're able to bring them in and really upgrade your roster. New Orleans continues to get better and better every year.
We got about a minute here. Yeah. San Diego at 28. You have him taking the running back from Fresno State, Ryan Matthews.
Love him.
What kind of running back is he? Who's he remind you of? And it's such a difficult question.
Frank Gore, maybe. Frank Gore is developed into a good pass catcher, and I think Matthews can. He doesn't have a lot of experience on third down. They just didn't use him
a lot.
He's
bigger than
Gore,
isn't he?
He's a little taller than Gore. Gore's about 217. Matthews is right around 220.
That's what I have, Matt, is your height and weight guy.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Tebow's 6'1", and Colt McCoy's 6'9". Thanks for that update. I told Colt McCoy that you've been fired as my measurables guy.
He's aware of it. But
I think Frank Gore's a pretty good comparison for Matthews.
No, any concern about the level of comp he played against? Because I watch him, and it's just you get one seal, and the guy was play the fight song.
There's a little bit there, I think. But I'd be more concerned, can he become that great pass catcher and on third downs? He's such good vision. And the lateral quickness, and that's the thing you really have to study as an inside runner in the NFL. Can he make that quick move and go? Can he stick his foot in the ground and accelerate if he's in that zone blocking? He does those things so well. That's why I think he's clearly the second best running back in this year's draft.
All right, before now and Thursday, we want to talk pooch punters and quick kickers, so get on that.
I've got one long snapper for you, too.
Excellent. That's critical component. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, fellas.
Let's bring Dick Vitale into the conversation, the Hall of Famer, for his regular Tuesday visit. He's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. And before we get to LeBron, who was so brilliant last night, Dickie V, let's focus for a minute on Deron Williams, a guy that you obviously covered a lot when he was in college. And maybe because of where he plays, he doesn't get the attention that some of the other guys around the league do, but he is a legitimately great young player.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think you talk about great point guards. you got to certainly think about him and Chris Paul, who unfortunately had some injuries. And I go back to that draft when they came out, and I remember Atlanta, man, needing a point guard. And I remember screaming on the air, but nobody ever listens to me, Greeny. Nobody listens to me. They said, oh, that's Dickie V. He's just excited. I said, you're making a major mistake letting a kid like Paul or Williams go. And they did. They took Marvin Williams. He's going to be a good player. He's a solid player, but he's no superstar like these guys. I mean, he's unbelievable. There's no question he's got great vision, handles the ball. But you mentioned LeBron. Let me say this. I never, ever thought I'd say this. I really believe this, guys. Are you listening?
Yeah.
Is my guy Mike there?
I got you. You go ahead.
The Notre Dame superstar is there.
Oh, hey,
Mike,
boy.
By the way, I need your help. You're in Notre Dame. I need your help.
Yeah.
My son-in-law, who's a Notre Damer, Thomas Krug, is running for circuit court judge here in Sarasota. Thomas Krug, I need you to come in and support him. We got to get some help for him, man.
I can see Golic doing that.
Absolutely.
He's too busy wearing a jersey. What were you going to say about LeBron?
Let me say this. I never, ever thought I'd say this. I think he will be, when it's all said and done, the greatest player ever to play. And I never thought after watching Michael all those years that anyone would even come close. Now, Kobe's been phenomenal, and Kobe certainly might be even in the argument. But LeBron, tell me what he can't do. He can score when he wants to score. There's only one guy that can stop him, and that's LeBron, if he's having a bad night shooting, taking bad shots, which he's capable of doing. But when you look at that body, and I don't want to hear about championships, okay? That'll ultimately happen probably, because now he's starting to get a better cast. Remember, Michael played with another Hall of Famer who wasn't too bad, by the name of Pippen. And he also played with a great rebounder in Rodman and a Cartwright. And the people around him, he had a great cast. I don't want to take anything away from him. Obviously, he's one of the greatest, and certainly many will say the greatest ever. But I really believe, barring any injury, LeBron will be the greatest ever. Do you agree or disagree?
I certainly think he's headed that way, but I want to know from your basketball opinion, what will be the biggest difference of why he will become greater than, in this case, Michael Jordan?
Well, I think you got to look at, for example, what he can do in rebound and what he can do in so many other areas. His physical strength, his incredible ability to take subpar people. I mean, what he did in Cleveland. All right, now he's got Jameson. Okay, he's got Shaquille. But Shaquille, let's face it, at the end of his career, still is trying to ultimately win a championship here for them and help them, and he will help them. I think they're going to win it all this year, by the way. I think their biggest obstacle is not in the West. It's in the East. It's going to be the Magic, because Dwight Howard is an absolute monster as a rebounder and defender. But I think when it's all said and done, and you look at what LeBron does, what he has done with that really, really marginal talent around him in his first few years has been amazing. I mean, to be able to take them as far as he had in the playoffs over the years, I really believe really puts him on another level. I'm in love with him. I think the guy is absolutely the best. He's the creme de la creme.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dickie V. I think my answer to Gullah's question would be, what's going to make him better? It's his size. He's doing things that in my lifetime of watching the NBA, and Dickie V, you go back farther than I do, but in my lifetime of watching basketball, I've never seen anyone his size that can do the stuff he can do. I know the game has changed in recent years. Guys like Nowitzki are seven feet tall.
Yeah, running
but a guy who has point guard skills and point guard quickness, but has the body of an NFL tight end. I've never seen that before. And then maybe he'll usher in a new era. But I've never seen a guy the size he is that has the skills that he has.
You know, he would have been a heck of an NFL player. Hey, got the NFL draft coming, and all the experts have done their research. I wrote a big column on my website, if people want to go, about how they're all going to make a major mistake. And they're all experts, and they do a great job. I respect all of them. The Kuipers, the Grudens, all the guys that evaluate do a phenomenal job. They work so hard. But let me tell you, you can do all the evaluating you want. You can run them in sprints. You can do all that jazz. You don't get into the heart, man, and you don't get into the mindset of what happens when they get the cash, they get the entourage, and all the things that happen around them. My feeling is there's something that you can't take away from the kid in Florida, and that's his mental toughness and the capacity he has to win. High school, college, whatever, when it's all said and done, they're going to make a major mistake if he doesn't go in the first round. Trust me. Hey, Mike, you know football, Mr. G, Mr. Golic. I don't know football. I don't know anything. I know one thing. I don't know the split tee. I don't know the wing tee. I know this. If they get six, we better get seven. And Tebow will get seven.
Well,
and I'll tell you this. He's a winner, man. And you better put him on your team. Marketability? Are you kidding me? What he could do for a franchise? How could you let that kid go? Anybody listening to me right now?
Yeah.
Draft Tebow.
Yeah, I'm listening to you, Dickie V, and you're talking about Tim Tebow. Unfortunately, marketing, when you're not going to play for a couple of years, isn't going to do you much good. And the one thing that the issue I have sometimes with people who talk about how hard they work and their work ethic, it makes it sound like the others don't. There are a lot of other players out there that work just as hard, you know, as Tebow.
Yeah, I'm not talking about work ethic, Mike. I'm talking about his mental toughness.
Well, like other guys have mental toughness as well. I know he's a winner on the couch. There's plenty of guys.
Mike, we're going to make a dinner. We're going to have a dinner down at Fighting Irish Notre Dame at a football game.
Okay.
I will take you out or you take me out. I guarantee in 3 years he's starting quarterback somewhere in the league.
I love the bet.
All right.
But Dickie V, realize you're giving him odds because you buying him dinner is a whole lot more expensive
really
than
is.
Him buying you dinner.
Yeah, it really is.
Dick Vitale, the Hall of Famer, every Tuesday with us here on Mike and Mike.
A little earlier today, Dexter McCluster, Ole Miss running back, was here in studio. We had the chance to visit with him on the eve of the upcoming draft here, and we had to come firing right out of the gates because here's a guy who is known for his speed, and when he went to the combine in Indy, I thought he was going to run in the high threes or something, and he was, what, 4.55, and people were like, well, what happened? So we began our interview by asking him, what happened?
Yeah, on my start, you know, I didn't have the best start coming out of my start. Stumbled a little bit about the 5 yard line. Didn't think it was going to hurt me that much. Thought I can, you know, gain back that speed real quick, but it ultimately did hurt me. But I just took that as a second opportunity for me to, you know, get better and go to pro day and show that I can run.
Well, because when your currency, in other words, what you've got to sell is your speed, and you don't show that, people are like, well, wait a minute. But yet you'd showed it throughout your whole career on the field in games. But Ryan and I talk about this all the time. It seems like in the NFL, they want to find a reason not to like you. Have you dealt with that throughout this process, like trying to explain to people, no, really, I'm pretty fast?
Yeah, definitely. You know, they want to find, you know, what can they find on Dexter McCluster? You know, is he too small? We know he's fast, but he might be a little too small. And I think I kind of confused them. You know, at the combine, they were looking for me to, you know, not get the bench press as much as I did and run fast, but, you know, I got 20 reps on the 225 and didn't run as fast, so they were kind of like, what's going on? But, you know, like you said, all through the season, you know, I showed that I can run, and when I'm on the football field, I feel as fast as the fastest man on the field.
You almost had to deal with that at Ole Miss because your man, the Right Reverend there, he didn't seem to want to run you a lot and protect you. Was that something that was a game plan in the beginning of the year because they were afraid of wearing you out with 20 carries a game in the SEC?
It was not game plan. You know, my junior year, you know, I kind of elevated, you know, him putting me at running back, just, you know, kind of show my versatility.
Uh-huh.
Coming into this season, you know, I was like, yeah, let's go. I'm going to get the ball.
But it seemed like until it was a South Carolina game where the only thing that was working offensively was hand it off to Dexter and just get out of the way or hopefully block for him a little bit. But then, like, there was that stretch where you were just on fire through the conference, and it was different from what they had in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, definitely. It started off real slow. And after the South Carolina game, when Coach he tried to pull me off, he was like, you know what, Dexter, are you tired? I said, no, just keep feeding me the ball, keep feeding the ball. So I thought after that game, it was just going to, you know, continue, but it kind of went back to the same thing, you know, me not touching the ball at all. So I was kind of, you know, just in awe, like, wow, what do I have to do?
And then you went for like 800-plus yards in four straight games, so it worked out.
The National Football League obviously will represent an increase in the challenge. It does for everybody. Mm-hmm. But playing in the Southeastern Conference is no joke. How do you feel like game in and game out, week in and week out, the Saturdays in the South prepare you for the Sundays in the National Football League?
In the SEC, you can't take a day off. Every Saturday, you know it's going to be a fight. You know it's going to be a grind. And coming into the NFL, it's just like that. You can't take a day off in the NFL because you have all-stars on each side of the ball, so you have to be on your A game at all times.
What are the guys in the league asking you about what role you see yourself in? In other words, they're saying to you, like, can you be a third down back? Can you be an every down back? You want to return? Like, what are they asking you, and how do you think they see you, your role in the league?
first of all, they ask me, what do I see myself as? And I tell them a running back. You know, I've been doing it all my life. And then they kind of tell me, well, we see you as a slot receiver. Do you mind doing that? I tell them, no. You know, I'm a football player, and I feel equally comfortable at the slot receiver or the running back. So you're going to get the same guy wherever you put me.
What offense do you think that you fit the best, the stuff that you see on Sundays?
Funny, it's going to be kind of hard to answer that because I haven't been the type of guy to, you know, grow up watching football. You know, I just love the game and never really watched it. So I would say whoever picks me are going to have to have a creative mind and be willing to, you know, make packages for me.
How does that happen? How do you grow up and play as well as you do, play in the SEC and then never watch it on Sunday?
A lot of people ask me that, but you know what? I just never really watched it, you know, and if I did watch it, I wasn't going for anybody, just pure watching the game.
So it's not like you don't see yourself as a Chris Johnson type. I mean, you're at least familiar with who, like I say that name, you know what I'm talking about.
Definitely.
Okay. But so.
that would freak us out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, because I know you don't live in a bubble, but it is interesting that you didn't pattern yourself after everybody. You just running for daylight?
You know what? I kind of did pattern myself after Chris Johnson, but a person that I watch all the time, he's not in the league now, is Barry Sanders. I watched him before every game. These last 2 years of my career, I can probably tell you what play is coming up next, and I think he was very explosive, and I try to outdo him, so to speak.
What was the best call out of the huddle where you knew once you heard it, all right, it's on? Give me, run us through it.
Let's go. It's out of 21 personnel, two receivers and a fullback and one back, and I would say 7 week. We called it 7 Jerry. That's when Big John Jerry pulls around the left side for me and cleans up everything that's in his path. And after that, it's just, like you said, the speed.
What was the play call for Jevon Snead to drop back and look really confused?
Wow.
You don't have to say anything. I said it.
I don't know if that's in the playbook.
No.
Well, because to be honest and be real here, there are a lot of folks that thought that this might be the fall in Oxford, where it's always great in Oxford regardless, but maybe this would be a special year, and Jevon just never seemed to get over the hump. Did that surprise you all, that it never quite clicked?
It did, but you know, coming in, he sat out a year at Ole Miss, and he was tearing up our starting defense when he got there, but he couldn't play. And he was kind of under the radar last season, or the year before,
sure.
And he tore it up this year coming into it. You know, he was, you know, looking to be a Heisman candidate, so I don't know if the pressure got to him. I'm not him, but we're human. You know, we're football players, but at the end of the day, we're human, and we are going to make mistakes, but he's still an athlete, and he's still a great quarterback.
Hey, we appreciate you stopping by, and whatever the 40 times were, Ryan and I are big believers of football players are football players. It's not about how much you bench or what you ran in a 40 in Indianapolis.
And all your Ole Miss times are pretty good. It seemed like everybody was.
Yeah, exactly. You improved that a bunch, right?
Yes.
Ryan wanted to know, were you guys running downhill there? Because everybody was like
7 guys all improved.
Yeah, before the games, I used to always go out there and kind of mess with the field so I can outrun everybody.
See, you're clever. That's a thinking man. You're going to find your way into the league. Thanks for your time, man. Best of luck this week.
Thanks, sir.
Log on to ESPN.com/podcenter or ESPNradio.com for more great podcasts.